I am from beyond. Listen, and all you desire will be yours. Welcome to Spider-Dan and the Secret Wars. Prepare for battle.
Unipod.
Welcome to Prattleworld. I'm your host, the ever-amazing, ever-spectacular Spider-Dan, and in this podcast, I spotlight entertainment's best-kept secrets that a mainstream audience may find boring. Hello, guys, and welcome to the first inaugural Puny Pod. Yes, so these are going to be pods where I don't go on for the full hour and a half that I'm allocated to on Podbean. I'm just going to do something, one topic, and I'd say they're going to be under or over kind of half an hour. So, you know, you could listen to them on the way to work or whatever you're doing. Quite an easy listen with my sultry, sultry, sexy voice. So, before I go full on Partridge, I haven't done much, just me on my own at the moment, but I am talking to guests very soon. So I realise I haven't done much on comic books, and I do love them, as I'm sure a lot of people know. So I decided to focus on one of the underrated, underappreciated Batman stories, because we all know the big ones, The Dark Knight Returns, Year One, Long Halloween, you know, all the kind of biggies. But, you know, what are the lesser known decent Batman stories? Because almost every Batman story is good to some level. He's one of those characters which just is quite consistently well written, well drawn. Everybody wants to have a go at Batman, have a stab at Batman, including this character in this storyline, the Cagey Beast, or also known as the Beast. So this storyline was from the late 80s. So it was, 88, 89. I think it was in Detective Comics or Batman. I think I'm going to say Batman. Anyway, the Ten Knights of the Beast introduces the Cagey Beast. Well, I'll go on to him in a moment, because that's what the story's all about, basically. But basically, the writer, Jim Starlin, was very famous for creating Thanos, as obviously most people will know the name now, you know, when the Avengers came out, which is what the Puny Pod reference is from, Puny God, from the whole blah, 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 you know. So Thanos wasn't that well known until he made his appearance in mainstream media in that film. People are like, who's that big purple guy at the end? Tell me. Which all my friends turned to me and did when we were watching it. And I was very excited when I saw him. And it led to some really good movies recently. So Jim Starlin is... he's basically following the form that kind of Frank Miller set in the Dark Knight Returns in the Year One, with, you know, a lot of the political, social kind of discussion, intrigue, commentary that Frank Miller put in his books. So he kind of follows that tone, as well as the kind of dark, gritty, grim tone, that kind of noirish kind of monologues that a lot of comic book characters have. So he kind of ran with that and into, you know, he did a few stories before this one, but this was probably his biggest and longest storyline that he'd had on Batman initially. He's one of my favourite writers, really interesting. So he can do these grim, dark, gritty kind of street-level stories, and he can, you know, do these spanning cosmic sagas. So he's got a lot of range, and I do like him. He's very deep. He thinks that, like, especially in his Thanos books, Thanos is one of the most interesting characters in comics, you know, bar none. And he develops, changes, alters his, you know, thinking. He's a hero, he's a villain, you know, he's amazing. And I cannot get enough Jim Starlin Thanos stories. Again, not talking about Batman, are we? So I've only got a short amount of time on this one, so I'm going to go on to the artist. Jim Aparo is one of my favorite Batman artists and one of the most kind of quintessentially kind of, he's been drawing Batman from, I think, the late 60s through the 70s. Brave and the Bold was one of his big titles. He drew a part of the Nightfall saga, which introduced Bane and broke Batman's back famously. So I really like his style. It's quite, it's quite standard kind of superhero kind of, it's nothing too out there or weird, but it gets the job done. It's really sharp and clean work. I really like the way he draws Commissioner Gordon's mustache. It's almost like this big handlebar, or he looks like almost like an old cowboy or something, like that huge kind of mustache, which I really enjoy. Let's move on to the plot. The only problem with this story that I have is that the plot does date it quite a bit. It's the late 80s and Reagan is in power in the US as president. And this plot is concerning kind of Cold War politics. It's concerning the, I think it's called the SDI, the Strategic Defense Initiative, which was nicknamed the Star Wars program. It was kind of a way of Reagan trying to make nuclear weapons obsolete. So it had a lot of kind of experimental lasers and particle beam weapons and smaller tactical missiles that were going to, it's a satellite system in space, and so that was basically what this plot revolves around. So a rogue section of the KGB are out to kill and just kill them, kill anybody involved in that program, all the way up to any scientists or political parties, political members or politicians, that's the word for them, damn politicians, that they are they're involved in the development or basically the advertising, the marketing of it, I guess. So it was nicknamed the Star Wars program because it was people thought it was so ludicrous at the time. Obviously, anyone that was anti-Reagan. So they've got a basically, the KGB's mission is to kill anybody involved. And most of them are in Gotham for over these next 10 days, the 10 Nights of the Beast, to kind of talk about it and develop it and kind of go a bit further forward. So this rogue kind of assassin and his assistant, the KGB, so is Anatoly Niyazev. I can't remember the other guy's name at this moment in time. So he is a cybernetically enhanced killing machine. So he's a master of various forms of martial arts and various weapons. He is, I would call him a kind of proto-Bane. He's like, physically, he's a match for Batman. I've always thought about some of the Batman villains. Though I love like characters like the Scarecrow and the Joker, I've never seen them as like physically a match for Batman. Batman's trained all these martial art forms, all these ways of combat, and I don't necessarily feel like some of those villains could be a physical threat. Like Bane is, very much so, and Ra's al Ghul is a good physical threat for Batman as well as intellectually. Bane is very much, and I feel like before Bane debuted, the KG Beast was a Bane, who's very intelligent, very physically comparable to Batman. He has the ability to he injures Batman a lot in that, like Batman goes through the ringer in these stories because the KG Beast, or the Beast as he's known, is just such a combatant, such an equal. Batman even says in the book, I finally met someone, I met my match, basically is what he says. You don't hear Batman say that a lot about certain villains. He's just absolutely outmatched. He can't stop these murders because the Beast is quite imaginative when he comes to killing. Like, that is his thing. We don't get much kind of personal development of the Beast and his motivations. He's just a Arnold Schwarzenegger, basically, kind of, just Russian killing machine, he acts and he kills in the space of these four issues, in the space of 10 nights, he kills over 100 people in these stories, innocent people and the targets he has. And there's a scene where Batman is climbing aboard a truck, like trying to grab them, trying to stop the KG Beast and his partner. And they see a kid's school bus and they plow right into it. And luckily Batman manages to kind of move the truck out of the way just at the last moment, kind of swerve to miss the bus. But they have no qualms of innocent people, children. They are just out to kill. You know, later on his partner does a suicide bomb attempt as well. It's like balls to the wall insanity of just like it's a cacophony of carnage and murder and mayhem. It's great, and it makes for a really gripping read. And Batman struggles to predict the way he's going to, like, in one scene he poisons a big kind of celebratory dinner for this politician. Everybody, like, it doesn't poison one dish, he poisons everybody's dish all at once. And but then he goes from that, and that's kind of stealthy kind of poisoning and, you know, and smothering someone in their sleep. And then, you know, when it calls for it, there's one of the politicians or scientists gets away on a plane. And what does the KG Beast do? He just fires a bazooka at it. Why not? And just takes out everybody on that plane. But yeah, he's a really fascinating character. I really like him. And I feel like after this story, people forgot how deadly he was, because I think Bane took over that kind of top spot for the physical kind of brawn, leather bound, you know, match mentally and physically for Batman. He started getting written like very stereotypical, like kind of Russian, like, you know, in Soviet Russia, car drives you. You know, it became very silly like that. He did get a better costume, better design, and kind of more cybernetics. And he got a cybernetic eye as well. And he looked a little bit less like an S&M freak. That's the only problem I have with this story, really, is that the design of the costume was quite, you know, you might as well be wearing nothing, really. It's quite revealing. Even in the covers, he looks more and more S&M-like than he does inside the book. But he's a really cool villain. I think he's a really underused. I read Batman, I think it's My Own Worst Enemy, when he goes on a kind of road trip with Two-Face, which is a great story on its own, but the main antagonist in it is the KG Beast. And again, it's quite a recent comic, so it's nice to see him kind of come back in that kind of that strong form again, on such strong form. And, you know, he wants to just hunt Batman because he is his equal. But like I said, yeah, the kind of politics and stuff, it's a nice plot. It's an interesting plot, and it's nice kind of tying into the, you know, real world aspects of, you know, of Gotham and the real world, and tying that into the DC universe. It's really interesting, and I like when comics get political or have some kind of real world leanings, you know, but they add, obviously, it's heightened reality and unrealistic things, but now it's really, really cool. And, you know, Batman's trying to work with all these kind of CIA, FBI, police, and even the Soviet Union want this shut down. Like, they're all working together to shut this guy down, to shut the KG Beast down. And yeah, he's great. And there's a scene where I don't want to spoil too much, but there's a scene where his arm gets caught in a rope and Batman's got him. He's like, all I have to do is hang here. And we've caught the beast. We finally caught the beast. And the beast cuts his own hand off just to get away, which is amazing. But yeah, so there's quite a little bit of there's more like kind of twists and turns and kind of espionage kind of stuff, like who's the mole, who's giving out all the information to the beast so that you can make all of his kills. So that's a really fascinating part of the story. And there's a lot of twists and turns in it, and you can't necessarily predict them, which is nice and it's exciting. But it's a lot of fun as well. There's Batman kind of doing the classic thing of dressing up in disguises and things like that, trying to outsmart the beast as best he can. It's really, really cool. Now, this story also features the post-crisis Jason Todd. So that's the second Robin to the uninitiated. Jason Todd in the pre-crisis, By the way, Crisis on Infinite Earths, if you don't know, was basically a massive reboot of DC. So they destroyed all kind of multiple universes and kind of condensed it, made it a bit more simpler, and kind of got rid of a lot of kind of unused continuity, the convoluted continuity that happens. Now they do it like every couple of years, just as a kind of easy way for new readers to get involved. So that's what the first one they ever did in the 80s. It's a great story. So when they rebooted it, because basically in pre-Crisis, Jason Todd was basically just a clone of you know, almost identical origin to Dick Grayson, which wasn't that interesting. And, you know, I didn't really get the point of it. Obviously you want Robin, but you don't want him too similar. I mean, you can't. Exactly. You don't want the exact same thing, do you? So they kind of made him a street kid. I mean, he met Batman because he was stealing the Batmobile's wheels, which I think is amazing. But yeah, he was a street kid. And he shows, you know, he's angry, he's twisted, he's prone to violence, you know, that we would see later on in the stories. And Jim Starlin actually wrote Death of a Family, where, spoilers, Jason Todd, Robin dies, and that's got a lot of kind of political stories as well. I think he ended up in Iraq or somewhere like that. That's a really good story as well. I highly recommend that as well. But kind of that's a bit more of a famous one, so we all know about that one. So it's a really, really cool book, and Batman's using all his kind of ways and means to defeat the cagey beast, and he's really struggling. I enjoy when Batman is like the know-it-all and he's 20 steps ahead of everybody else. I think that's really cool, like, on occasion. But again, it's hard to be like, oh, he'll just, you know, oh, giving him prep time. As long as he's got enough prep time, he can do it all. I enjoy that when he's kind of a smart aleck, and now and again. But if that's constantly the way he's portrayed, you don't kind of feel for him. You're just like, oh, I know Batman will escape. I know Batman will get out. You know, he's already, again, 20 steps ahead of somebody, like the Beast or something. But in this story, he's not. He's falling behind. The scenes where he's struggling, like, he gets stabbed, he gets trapped, he breaks ribs, you know, he gets shot, you know, he really goes physically through the ringer, and he doubts himself, and he's not sure what the next move is. He tries to predict, but they're always 10, you know, they're 10 or 3 steps ahead, like the KG Beast or the Beast, and his assistant are like, you know, 10 steps ahead. And it's really interesting to see a struggling Batman. I really like where he, you know, he struggles to, when he's trying to persevere and he's trying to get through and he's trying to figure out, because we can all relate to that. We can all relate to the failings and the constant, you know, well, not to the huge amount of murder that happens in this particular comic, but at least he tries, at least he gives it a damn good go, and, you know, he does succeed. But yeah, I prefer a Batman that struggles. I prefer a Batman that I see be put through all of those issues and those problems, and, you know, but he still comes out on top. However, because I won't spoil the ending, but it is quite a controversial ending. Again, like I said, Jim Starlin is going for the kind of darker, grittier, and kind of morally questionable Batman, which I really, really, it was really interesting to see Batman go so far, because he's like, he's beat and bruised, and he admits he can't beat the Beast hand to hand. He can't, you know, he's not a young man anymore. He can't do that. But he would have proven himself back in the day. But Batman has to do something quite drastic to defeat the cagey beast. And that's probably one of the more interesting and fascinating parts of the story. And I like that he's in a weakened state, and that he has to think about that. He considers doing it and does it. There's even a scene where Batman is struggling so much, he has to throw a guy's dead body at the cagey beast just to stop him, which is pretty messed up as well. Like, and that comes, not, you know, pretty close to the end of the book, but it's really fascinating. There's a little bit of dark humor in this story as well, and, you know, it's really interesting to see, you know, where where Batman's head is at and how he manages. Because, like, I always think about, like, I think about, like, you know, we've got lots of assassin characters in comics. We've got lots of kind of, you know, Deadshot, Bullseye. But their, like, success rate for murder, like, Arcade's, like, one of my favourite ones. He's a Marvel Comics villain who he killed his parents, inherited loads of money, and then he... sorry, if you're hearing kids screaming, there's kids screaming outside. And it's annoying me a bit. I'm feeling like a cagey beast. Maybe I'll run their school bus down. Just kidding, guys. I'm not going to participate in murder. So anyway, where was I? Yeah. So the Arcade's great. He's really interesting, kind of a Joker-esque character, really over the top. And he creates these kind of mechanical theme parks that are full of, like, you know, theme park arcade themed murder gimmicks. He calls it Murder World, which is an amazing name all by itself. I'll have to cosplay Arcade at some point. I've got a white suit waiting, so I think that's definitely something I have to do in the future. But he's, like, success rate. He's supposed to be the world's greatest assassin. He hasn't killed anybody, or, like, there's very few kind of characters he's physically murdered, or you know. So there's a lot of characters like that. Like I said, for, like, success rate in being a murderer, a mass murderer, an assassin, the cagey beast wins out every time. Like, if, you know, compared to, I know people have counted up kind of body, you know, body count for, like, characters like the Punisher and things like that. But, you know, in four issues, in 10 days, that's got to be a record for any kind of comic books character to kill that many people in such a short amount of time. And it's just such a great read. And I highly recommend it as a story, because it's just balls to the wall, kind of crazy, and it's fun. And you see Batman struggle. And I loved it all. It's gripping. It's really gripping. It doesn't, like it could get bogged down in the kind of Cold War politics and the kind of, you know, the political leanings. I mean, it's the only comic I've ever read where you see Batman kidnap the president. You know, Batman kidnaps Ronald Reagan, and spoilers, he is the final target. There's 10 targets the Beast is after. 10 targets. However, in the book, he kills over 100 people. Those are just innocent bystanders that got in the way, pardon me, of the Beast. And it's a killer story. It's a killer. There's killer action sequences. Jim Aparo, you know, draws the hell out of it. You know, again, like, Batman goes through the physical ringer as well as, you know, as well as, you know, all sorts of things that are going on. It's kind of crazy that this story happens. But I'm a big fan of movies not many people like. I'm a big fan of comic book characters that people aren't that keen on or are unappreciated. You know, most of my cosplays and things I do are characters nobody even knows who I am. You know, I went to Wales Comic Con the other week. I was dressed as Ra's al Ghul, and three people recognized me out of, you know, hundreds or all the people I spoke to. You know, I like those characters, and it's nice to see, as much as I love the Joker, as much as I love all the main, Batman rogues gallery, all the villains, it's great to see something different and something unique, you know, and it's a roller coaster ride of a comic, and it never stops. It never kind of breaks up. And again, you could be again bogged down with all this kind of FBI Gotham, and, you know, there's a lot of kind of ways and means Batman is trying to stop these leaks getting out and the information getting to the Beast, because that's just how he goes about his mission. But yeah, it's really good. I really like Jim Starlin's work. If you want another great story that puts Batman through the psychological and physical ringer, you should definitely look at Jim Starlin's The Cult. I believe, I think it was Bernie Wrightson who drew that, I want to say. I could be wrong. Maybe Kelly Jones, possibly. But that has a Deacon Blackfire, who's another great Batman villain as well. He kind of tries to indoctrinate beats and brainwashes Batman into becoming part of his cult. And this is a villain who bathes in homeless people's blood. So yeah, I can highly recommend that. Maybe I'll do a puny pod on the cult. I would definitely need to reread that, find that somewhere. But yeah, highly recommend Jim Starlin's work. Anything that has Thanos in is great. Any of his Batman work as well. I've got, at the moment I'm reading Batman Second Chances, which is the start of kind of Jason Todd's story. And that literally follows on to, I think it's volume one of The Caped Crusader. So that's another graphic novel that's available digitally and physically as well. And then after that, from the end of that, it goes on to Death of the Family. So you get like a full kind of Jason Todd as post-crisis Jason Todd as Robin Arc. So I would, again, highly, highly, highly recommend those stories. All the Jim Starlin stories have been great and really interesting. And they are pretty dark. Like, you know, there's, I think at the start of the Death of the Family stuff, he starts talking about him and Robin taking down a quote unquote kiddie porn ring, which is like, oh fuck, that is pretty dark. So there's, yeah, I would really recommend them. And I think most of the stories are drawn by Jim Aparo as well. Just fantastic, fantastic artist. I couldn't get enough of his work. And it's a great, unfortunately forgotten Batman tale, but I highly, highly recommend it. And it's four issues, it's not long. It is available in the Caped Crusader Volume 1 collection. Go out, you can obviously get some older versions. You can get single issues as well, look on eBay for those. I think there's older out of print graphic novels or collections you can find, maybe on eBay as well. I don't know how much they'll be. Probably, if they're out of print, probably a bit more expensive. But yeah, that's it, guys. I hope you really enjoyed this and my overexcited, passionate ramblings and prattle. You can find me, as usual, at the usual places. So you can find me at Secret Boars. That's on Facebook. So you go into the Facebook search bar and put at Secret Boars. You'll find me there. Twitter, I am at Dan_Boars. The podcast itself is available on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify, and many, many more other podcast channels that I'm probably not aware of the names of, but you know, if you've got an RSS feed, it's on there. Remember to hashtag if you're going to be tweeting me or Facebook posting. So hashtag join the Prattalion, as you've enjoyed all that prattle from me, or hashtag prepare for prattle. I'll be back soon with, I think, my first guest and also an edition, the second edition of the Clone Boars. So stay tuned, guys, and I'll be back sooner than you think.